You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN 91.9 FM. I'm Katie Frankowitz. An Astoria city councilor who made housing his top priority says he will need to resign because he can't afford to continue to live in the district he represents. At a meeting on Monday, Vance Lump told the Astoria City Council he's in a situation where he would need to buy his current house again, something he cannot afford to do in the current housing market. He declined to provide more details, but says rentals in his price range and in his district are scarce.
I have said all along that the housing crisis is Astoria's biggest issue, as it touches on so many other problems in the city today, including homelessness, the ability for businesses to succeed, and the potential for Astoria to thrive in the future. Landlords that are bleeding renters dry and the high cost of homeownership have made it difficult for young, working-class people to see a stable future here.
Lump owns a historic wood window restoration and fabrication business and represents Ward 4, which covers the east side of Astoria, including Astoria's Uppertown and Alderbrook neighborhoods. Elected in 2024, Lump has frequently allied with city councilors Andrea Mazzarella, Andy Davis, and Elizabeth Adams on housing issues. The four have formed a majority on the council, emphasizing the need for a workforce and affordable housing. They approved new licensing requirements for vacation rentals, in part over concerns about the impact of such rentals on long-term housing availability in Astoria. Lump's seat on the city council will be vacant effective November 1st. The city council still needs to determine how they will go about filling that position. Mayor Sean Fitzpatrick said city councilors should think about people they know in Ward 4 who are involved in the community and might be good candidates. Lump hopes that whoever replaces him takes housing issues in Astoria seriously. The cause of a wildfire east of Astoria is still under investigation. The fire was reported Monday morning on privately owned land near Knob Point in Clatsop County, approximately 9 miles southeast of Napa. State fire crews and local and private responders went to the scene. Few details of the fire have been released yet. Brad Catton, the acting district forester for the Oregon Department of Forestry Astoria District Office, told KMUN Monday night that the fire was still burning in places, but was more under control than earlier in the day. The Tillamook County Board of Commissioners has agreed to purchase a building that previously housed the Bureau of Land Management for $2.4 million. This is the second time in as many years that the county has entered into a purchase agreement for the building, as they seek to address a shortage of space in the county courthouse building. Previously, Tillamook County planned to move state circuit courts to the BLM building after a remodel. Now they plan to relocate county staff to free up space for the courts in their current home. The purchase agreement includes a closing date of March 31, 2026. County staff will work to develop a financing package for the purchase. County Commission Chair Aaron Scar stressed that the sale agreement is not a final decision. The sale will depend on positive survey and inspection results, as well as funding. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald. Online at tillamookheadlightherald.com. You're listening to news on KMUN. Oregon Governor Tina Kotek signed an executive order Monday aimed at fast-tracking solar and wind projects. Kotek's order directs state agencies to prioritize, authorize, and accelerate permits on renewable energy projects in the state. This comes after Republicans in Congress voted to sunset a federal tax credit for up to half of renewable energy construction costs. Developers now have only until July 4th to begin construction to receive those credits. Earlier this year, a data and policy group identified 9 wind and solar projects at risk of losing those tax incentives. Combined, those projects could generate enough energy to power 1 million homes. Portland's top attorney is accusing the U.S. Department of Justice of turning a blind eye to federal officers' treatment of protesters outside the city's Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility. Alex Selinsky reports.
City Attorney Robert Taylor wrote that federal officers guarding the South Portland ICE building appear to be violating peaceful protesters' constitutional rights by shooting chemical munitions at them. Taylor also accused federal agents of bias. He said that federal officers seem to be treating demonstrators who support the Trump administration favorably while firing tear gas and flashbang grenades at anti-ICE protesters. He urged federal civil rights attorneys to not use political arguments to weaken Portlanders' constitutional rights. Taylor's letter is in response to one sent by the Justice Department last week, announcing a federal investigation into the Portland police for its treatment of right-wing media figures. It also comes a day after a federal judge temporarily blocked Trump from deploying the National Guard to Portland.
That was Alex Selinsky reporting. The Trump administration says a federal judge in Portland acted improperly this weekend when she blocked National Guard troops from deploying to the city. In an appeal filed Sunday, the administration asked a federal appeals court to undo the decision by U.S. District Judge Karen Immergut. Federal attorneys say months of nightly protests at an ICE facility in Portland have endangered officers there and stretched federal forces thin. But the state of Oregon and city of Portland argue the protests have been small and don't meet the threshold for calling in troops. They want Immergut's order to stand. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals will decide the matter. The court allowed a National Guard deployment in Los Angeles earlier this year. Casino and resort operations have brought some prosperity to the Umatilla Indian Reservation in eastern Oregon. But tribal officials say a lot of that money doesn't stay on the reservation. Now they're looking to change that. Antonio Sierra reports.
This is the inside of the trailer.
Tessa Minthorn Woods' dream is painted bright yellow and on wheels. Woods is giving me a tour of her newly renovated food cart.
And I installed and put together.
Her specialty is Indian tacos, Tex-Mex style tacos that use fry bread instead of tortillas. She's invested a lot of money on getting this project off the ground.
Probably around 45 to 50 grand.
Wow.
She has the equipment and the cooking skills, but for now, her cart remains parked at her home on the Umatilla Indian Reservation. But soon, she expects to have a place to serve customers. The tribal government and others are creating a park for food carts. It's among several programs meant to help people like Tessa and bring a more modern economy to the reservation. Construction crews are busy building the second hotel tower for the wildly successful Wild Horse Resort and Casino. But across the street, Nick Yahweh Community Financial Services is working on a more modest construction project, the Food Truck Park. The nonprofit provides loans and financial advice to tribal members. Business services manager Jacob Wallace says the project will support tribal small businesses.
We don't have a lot of infrastructure out here, and it's expensive to build. So we're like, how do we kind of kill 30 birds with one stone?
The park plans to host 6 food carts at the park in a high traffic area. But the park isn't just catering to visitors. Wallace says carts owned by tribal members or their descendants will be prioritized. Dave Tovey is the organization's executive director. He says the federal government's reservation policy can make it difficult to develop projects like this one.
They couldn't have designed a more hostile system for home ownership or small business ownership or even a certain level of freedom than a reservation.
The tribes wanted to experiment with the home ownership program but ran into a similar issue. Much of the reservation is on trust land, meaning it can't be bought or sold without the consent of the federal government. Banks don't want to provide mortgages without property as a collateral, making home building difficult. J.D. Tovey, the executive director of the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation, and Dave Tovey's son, says there are cultural hurdles as well.
We often talk we live in two worlds, where we have to live in the modern world where things have value, things have possession and possession rights, but culturally we don't hold those. So that's something we each have to kind of wrestle with individually.
The tribal government solution is the Nick Yahweh neighborhood. Tribal members can build or buy a house by signing a 99-year lease with the tribes. J.D. Tovey says the idea was initially met with some skepticism from other tribal members.
I remember people saying, J.D., we don't need a metropolis, you know, and I'm like, 40 houses a metropolis does not quite make.
Someday, J.D. Tovey envisions the neighborhood adding a post office, laundromat, and other quality of life services.
I'll be serving Native American rye bread.
When the food truck park opens this fall, Wood plans to be one of the first tenants.
But I love to cook. It's my passion. I love the community. I love to serve people. And I just can't wait to be doing this.
Yeah.
She remembers the excitement she felt when her great-grandmother made Indian tacos for her when she was young. Antonio Sierra, reporting from the Umatilla Indian Reservation.
President Trump has canceled millions of dollars in grants for animal testing. Animal rights activists have specifically called on him to claw back funding from one local lab. KUOW's Scott Greenstone went there.
The mice cages are quiet. The ferrets are listening to nature sounds. But the monkeys in these labs at the University of Washington are listening to Bobby Brown.
Classical music and talk radio, they seem to really like. They seem to really like Disney movies and Animal Planet and anything that has other animals that they can watch.
Dr. Melissa Berg and the staff try lots of activities to enrich the lives of these caged pigtail macaques, freezing their food into astroturf so they can sort of forage, making them climb up the side of the cage for peanuts. But the monkeys find their own enrichment too. Like Thor, who just figured out how to unlatch and grab a piece of plastic out of the food hopper on his cage.
Thor, you need to not do that, sir.
Nellie Nicholson is the husbandry manager.
This is why my job is fun, because it's constantly trying to be smarter than the monkeys and every single day being reminded that you're not smarter than the monkeys.
The intelligence of monkeys like Thor has been a driving argument from the animal rights movement to end experiments on them that used to be more associated with the political left. But recently, it's picked up steam with figures like HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. President Trump has closed an animal lab in West Virginia and canceled nearly $28 million in grants for animal testing in his second term. Animal rights groups like PETA, which has called on Trump to claw back funding from this facility, smell victory.
It's so close.
Dr. Lisa Jones-Engel used to work at the UW lab and has studied macaques in the wild.
The sounds that you hear in the lab, those are generally not good sounds. You hear, you know, the infants who have been pulled from the moms who are just making the sound that says, I am terrified, I am afraid, where is my mother? You hear the moms, where is my child? You hear the males just angry.
Monkeys have died at this facility in the past, including 2 years ago during a cranial implant. Deborah Fuller took over after that as director. She said deaths are tragic but very rare, and experimenting on monkeys is necessary for life-changing medicines and technologies.
When we write a grant, we have to say, why can't you use something else? You know, we have to justify it.
The center boasts that its monkeys have shed light on COVID transmission and helped develop the first cochlear implants. Important drugs like the HIV prevention medicine known as PrEP were tested on monkeys at this center before they went to human trials. Dr. Berg, the veterinarian, her mom beat cancer thanks to chemotherapy that was tested on monkeys.
Every single animal here is making the ultimate sacrifice for other animals and for people every single day. And so I will spend the rest of my life showing up for them, because there was some monkey somewhere that I'll never have the opportunity to know that is the reason that my mom is still here and that she gets to go to my wedding in 2 months and be part of the rest of my life.
Other scientists say animal trials can be faulty and science should move beyond them. The National Institutes of Health under Trump has begun focusing more on new approaches, potentially using 3D printed tissues. Computational methods, sometimes referred to as organs on microchips, or even artificial intelligence.
I give the Trump administration and NIH a lot of credit in starting down that road.
Paul Locke is a professor at Johns Hopkins School of Public Health who works on transitioning to those new approaches.
But if we ended all animal testing now, In my estimation, it would not be good for science. It would not be good for human health.
Locke says while promising, those approaches are not yet ready to pull off the shelf and use instead of animals. I'm Scott Greenstone in Seattle.
You're listening to KMUN News. If you have a news tip or story idea, get in touch with us. Email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org. Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and the KMUN News Team. That includes host and producer Skylar Butenshin and me, KMUN News Director Katie Frankowitz. Our news broadcasts air Monday through Thursday, beginning at 7:59 in the morning and 4:59 in the evening. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.